This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. I'm reporting for Truth Dig and Free Speech TV from the Democratic National Convention. And I just recently spoke with Norman Solomon, the co-founder of RootsAction.org. He is also a delegate for Bernie Sanders. He's been holding press conferences every day to speak with press about what Bernie Sanders delegates are doing and where this convention is heading. Here is that conversation. I'm here on day three of the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia with Norman Solomon. He is the co-founder of RootsAction.org, which has been coordinating the Bernie Delegates Network. Welcome, Norman.
Thank you, Sonali.
And you're also a delegate for Bernie Sanders yourself from the state of California.
That's right.
So you just held a press conference where a lot of press have been gathering, and you've been doing it every day of the convention to kind of keep them up to date on what a good chunk of Bernie Sanders delegates are up to. A lot of people asking you, well, what instructions is Bernie Sanders delivering to his movement, and how are the movement why is the movement not responding? There seems to be a misunderstanding, not just from the press, but I think from a lot of us, about the dynamics between political parties and social movements, because for the first time in a long time, a social movement has infiltrated a political party, right?
Yes, well, I think it's an unusually healthy dynamic. I mean, nothing's perfect, but usually politicians see social movements as subsets of their campaigns, just sort of like fuel to go into their engines. And of course, the opposite should be the case. Political campaigns should be a subset of the social movements that, as Bernie has pointed out, really are responsible for everything we can be proud of in this country, from the bottom up grassroots activism. So in this case, Bernie's, I think, campaign was propelled by the fact that we had Occupy. We have movements that have challenged the corporate structures of this country. And when he declared for president, what, a year or more ago, it was a natural fit, and there began to be a synergy that grew and grew and grew. And so the conventional wisdom was from the mass media, okay, he's an outlier, he's a fringe candidate, and the grassroots proved that wrong. We're now at a place where Karen Bernal, the co-leader of the California delegation, put it, the Bernie campaign per se is melting on the grass. I use the analogy, you grow something, it turns into compost. And then you're going to keep growing, you know? So I think this is something happening. But there is a crunch point here. It's like tectonic plates. There's a grinding going on this week. It's a transition. It's a beautiful and heartbreaking experience to stand on the floor, and I think people must have felt this watching TV, and hear the vote. And then you go to Vermont, and Bernie's there, and for me, hearing his brother, it was just, you know, we're trying to live on beyond what our parents were able to do, and we're trying to leave something for the next generations. And I think that the Bernie campaign has shown that, with all of the differences between running an election and building movements, that there can be a positive synergy. And to me, that's very important, even though the mass media hate that. They want to whip people into line, and, you know, now it's time. I've started to think of it as, we know the cliche, politics ain't beanbag, but the corporate media, they love conformity. It reminds me of that old tactician who said, every conqueror is a lover of peace. If you have triumphed with the numbers, then it's like, okay, now it's time to be peaceful. But all of a sudden, these hard-boiled pundits who say, oh my gosh, you know, we have to be real, we're savvy, we know that politics ain't beanbag. When the convention starts, all of a sudden politics is supposed to be beanbag. And I think Bernie has been sort of on the cusp of that, because he's in a box because of his successes, but we're not in that small of a box as Bernie delegates and as movements.
Yeah, it's strange to see people confused as to why Bernie Sanders can't simply instruct his followers, if you will, to do something, and they will all simply go along. Now, of course, as you said, he is doing what he has to do, and there's a sort of a political understanding between him and his campaign and the movement. But I think from the outside, from media, they're not getting it, and they want to know what's next. And that was a question
anxiety.
That came up.
Yes, there's a lot of anxiety, genuine and otherwise, with any ambiguity whatsoever. But the real world is ambiguous. I think it's quite true what you're saying, that the corporate media, and that includes, of course, PBS and NPR, they don't get it. They're used to the conventional, where no pun intended, where campaigns are run by candidates who tell their delegates, you will do this, you won't do that. And the dynamics are quite different here because the Bernie delegates are independent-minded, partly because we embrace what Bernie has said, which is real social change comes from the bottom, not from the top. And also because in this situation, we have a level of trust and a strong level of independence. And so in this case, when Bernie sent out for the first time, I mean, we've been planning this stuff, delegates for weeks and months and actions and putting out statements and planning for independent action potentially at this convention. We didn't hear from Bernie, do this, don't do that, until Monday, where he sent out an email. So that's on the eve of just hours before the gavel fell, maybe actually an hour before the gavel fell. And he said, you know, I would urge you not to boo or protest on the convention floor. And he's doing what he has to do to say that. And then people had to make their own assessments. And the Bernie Delegates Network has been doing something that unfortunately just has not been done by any other source, news media, any other entity, which is to actually poll the Bernie delegates. Right. And I found it fascinating, you know, and the most recent one that we did, which we released just an hour ago, the data on, was to ask Bernie delegates, how do you feel about what Bernie asked when Bernie sent out the message on Monday, don't protest on the convention floor? Did it influence you? Did it influence you somewhat or not at all? And the figures are, if you take it influenced you or influenced you somewhat, about three quarters said it did. Either it influenced or influenced somewhat. And a quarter said didn't influence them at all. I think that's healthy. You know, the way I look at it is we take it under advisement.
Right.
And I think that's a good relationship because when politicians run movements, movements die.
Yeah.
When movements can create the strength of political electoral campaigns, that's great. I mean, the classic example is Harold Washington as mayor of Chicago became mayor because of social movements, and they were looking for a candidate to support. The social movements at the base were looking at it, whereas usually it's candidates looking for social movements to co-opt.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Norman. A lot of the conversation that's been happening, particularly in social media, between the sort of pragmatists who are like, look, we all have to hold our nose and vote for Hillary Clinton because Trump is so much worse, and those who say, I want to vote my conscience, etc. One of the things that I'm noticing is a lot of like lecturing and bullying that's happening to other voters, which seems to go against my understanding of democracy. I mean, people need to take the information. Your vote belongs to you, basically, right? You can be swayed by one argument or another. Hillary Clinton is clearly not doing a very good job of trying to reach out to all the Bernie supporters. She is basically saying, I'm standing where I'm going to stand, and you should simply come to me because I'm not Trump. And then those people who are saying, well, we don't like that, are now being in many ways sort of bullied and chastised and the you know, meeting a lot of rats. Some of these are newly politicized people who would never have gotten involved in election and in politics. And I feel like there's a huge amount of infighting happening from people wagging their fingers and other people either feeling bullied or simply saying, you know, to hell with you, I'm gonna do what I want and not responding well to the vote for Hillary because Trump is so much worse. You're being selfish by not voting for Hillary. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, for one thing, I do think to be fair to Hillary Clinton, she has reached out to Bernie voters to put her political thumbs in their eyes. So I guess that's a form of reaching out. I mean, you just look at the last week where Debbie Wasserman Schultz finally resigns because of the email scandal. And within hours, Hillary Clinton appoints her an honorary chairwoman of the 50 states component of the Clinton for President campaign. And now, just as we speak, hours ago, one of the closest political operatives for Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, Terry McAuliffe, the governor of Virginia, has said that after all, Hillary Clinton will be inclined to support the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP.
She's giving people the Bernie crowd no reason to support her, right?
Well, and then Kaine, I mean, as we speak, you know, Tim Kaine is going to be nominated here at the convention, somebody who has voted, one of just a dozen Democrats in the Senate, to vote for fast-tracking TPP, for instance, supported right to, so-called right-to-work anti-labor law in Virginia, et cetera, et cetera. So to get to the main part of your question, though, I think if you just look at the argument over whether it makes sense to vote for Hillary Clinton or not in November to stop Trump, in 80% of the states, by population, it's a totally worthless waste of time argument. I'm not going to spend a nanosecond trying to tell anybody who lives in California or New York or Texas that they should vote for Hillary Clinton. I don't plan to vote for Hillary Clinton. I live in California. Why in the world would I vote for a warmonger who's part of corporate establishment? It just would make no sense to me. So it seems to me it would help in part to narrow the discussion to what should go on in swing states. And there, I agree with Noam Chomsky that...
To interrupt you, what should go on in swing states, right? Shouldn't voters be making their own decisions rather than you and I standing here and saying voters in swing states should? Voters in swing states and voters everywhere should do what they need to do, right? Shouldn't Hillary Clinton be doing her darndest to win over voters in swing states? And why isn't she? And for voters in swing states to say, all right, we're going to vote for Hillary Clinton to stop Trump, don't they give away any iota of leverage that they would have had?
Well, there are several strands there. I mean, it's in our interest to stop Trump. Sometimes point is that we're not at all on the same page as Hillary Clinton on so many issues. We're profoundly not on the same page, but we have the same enemy when the votes are counted in November. And politically, there are such things as tactical alliances. There are such things as splits in the ruling class, if you will. And there's a significant split here where it's not only who's in the White House, who holds the cabinet and sub-cabinet positions, or who appoints the Supreme Court, although I think all that's very important, but it's empowering a base of nativism, xenophobia, racism, misogyny. Can you imagine the power at the base of this country, the grassroots, that will come? But then to get to the point that hopefully won't come, but if Trump is elected president, would be enormously empowered. You know, we're brainwashed by the mass media to think that fascists only goose step and wear brown shirts. And as Sinclair Lewis wrote, you know, the book titled, the novel, It Can't Happen Here. Yes, it can, wrapped in the American flag. So I think ultimately it's absolutely true. We shouldn't lecture each other about how you should vote, but we can say how I will vote and how I would hope to vote if I lived in a different state.
That discourse does need to change, because most of the people who are supporters of whoever, Sanders, Stein, any party, they're fully aware of what Trump represents. I mean, I don't think we're under any illusions. He's made it so clear so many times to us what he would do as president. So it's not as though people are unaware of that. I suppose my question is that, you know, why the discourse seems to have really devolved so early in the campaign. We still have many months between now and November, and we seem to be bullying one another a little bit more than we need to.
Yeah, we shouldn't be doing that. I also think there are other two strands which are potentially dangerous in the left. The one is, and I have heard this, that Trump is not so bad, that Trump may be better, and certainly you cherry pick some issues, at least on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, he's better on some foreign policy issues. And, you know, some folks may be propelled by the justified anger and, if you will, hatred of Hillary Clinton, they sort of minimize, you know.
And I've also heard the ones who say, well, maybe this country does need somebody like Trump to, like, start, and that's a very dangerous sentiment.
Yeah, it is very much that it has to get worse before it gets better. It's plenty worse enough now, thank you. We're also able to remember, if we, you know, we're adult at this point, when we were told George W. Bush could never be elected president. For that matter, we heard that Ronald Reagan could never be elected president. It's a challenge, I think, to just hopefully have a deeper discussion without, as you point out, without pointing fingers.
Well, Norman, I want to thank you so much, as always, for the work you're doing. I know you're going to be busy between now and Thursday, so good luck to you.
Well, thank you, Sonali, and thanks for all the great work you're doing.
Thank you. Norman Solomon is the co-founder of RootsAction.org, and I spoke with him on day three of the Democratic National Convention. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. I'm here reporting for TruthDig and Free Speech TV, and you can find all our reporting online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also go to freespeech.org and truthdig.com.